In the end, she persuaded him, much against his will, to fly over to Amsterdam to see the semi-demi-finals of the Women's Heavyweight Wrestling Championship. "Oh, in a crowd," he grumbled, "as usual." He remained obstinately gloomy the whole afternoon, wouldn't talk to Len and his friends, of whom they met dozens in the ice cream soma bar between the wrestling bouts, and in spite of his misery, absolutely refused to take the half-gram raspberry sundae which he pressed upon him. "I'd rather be myself," he said. "Myself and nasty, not somebody else, however jolly." "A gram in time saves nine," said Lenina, producing a bright treasure of sleep-taught wisdom. Bernard pushed away the proffered glass impatiently. "Now don't lose your temper," she said. "Remember, one cubic centimeter cures 10 gloomy sentiments." "Oh, for Ford's sake, be quiet!" he shouted. Lenina shrugged her shoulders. "A gram is always better than a dam," she concluded with dignity, and drank the sundae herself. On their way back across the channel, Bernard insisted on stopping his propeller and hovering on his helicopter screws within 100 feet of the waves. The weather had taken a change for the worse. A southwesterly wind had sprung up. The sky was cloudy. "Look," he commanded. "But it's horrible," said Lenina, shrinking back from the window. She was appalled by the rushing emptiness of the night, by the black foam-flecked water heaving beneath them, by the pale face of the moon, so haggard and distracted among the hastening clouds. "Let's turn on the radio, quick." She reached for the dialing knob on the dashboard and turned it at random. "Skies are blue inside of you," sang 16 tremoloing falsettos. "The weather's always..." Then a hiccup and silence. Bernard had switched off the current. "I want to look at the sea in peace," he said. "One can't even look with that beastly noise going on." "But it's lovely, and I don't want to look." "But I do," he insisted. "It makes me feel as though..." He hesitated, searching for words with which to express himself. "As though I were more of me, if you see what I mean. More on my own, not so completely a part of something else. Not just a cell in the social body. Doesn't it make you feel like that, Lenina?" But Lenina was crying. "It's horrible, it's horrible," she kept repeating. "And how can you talk like that about not wanting to be part of the social body? After all, everyone works for everyone else. We can't do without anyone, even Epsilons."
"Yes, I know," said Bernard derisively. "Even Epsilons are useful. So am I, and I damn well wish I weren't."
Lenina was shocked by his blasphemy. "Bernard," she protested in a voice of amazed distress, "how can you?" In a different key, "How can I?" he repeated meditatively. "No, the real problem is, how is it that I can't? Or rather, because after all I know quite well why I can't, what would it be like if I could, if I were free, not enslaved by my conditioning?"
"But, Bernard, you're saying the most awful things."
"Don't you wish you were free, Lenina?"
"I don't know what you mean. I am free. Free to have the most wonderful time. Everybody's happy nowadays."
He laughed.
"Yes, everybody's happy nowadays. We begin giving the children that at 5. But wouldn't you like to be free to be happy in some other way, Lenina? In your own way, for example, not in everybody else's way."
"I don't know what you mean," she repeated. Then, turning to him, "Oh, do let's go back, Bernard," she besought. "I do so hate it here."
"Don't you like being with me?"
"But of course, Bernard. It's this horrible place."
"I thought we'd be more together here, with nothing but the sea and moon. More together than in that crowd, or even in my rooms. Don't you understand that?"
"I don't understand anything,"
she said with decision, determined to preserve her incomprehension intact.
"Nothing. Least of all," she continued in another tone, "why you don't take soma when you have these dreadful ideas of yours. You'd forget all about them, and instead of feeling miserable, you'd be jolly.
So jolly, she repeated, and smiled, for all the puzzled anxiety in her eyes, with what was meant to be an inviting and voluptuous cajolery.
He looked at her in silence, his face unresponsive and very grave, looked at her intently. After a few seconds, Lenina's eyes flinched away. She uttered a nervous little laugh, tried to think of something to say, and couldn't. The silence prolonged itself.